Welcome back in, hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Nashville Predators, taking your thoughts all show long on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Speaking of the text line, we've got some tickets to give away for Game 4 coming up on Sunday between the Predators and the Hurricanes. A little matinee hockey coming up on Sunday. Puck drop at 1:30 for Game 4. We've got a trivia question. If you get the answer right, if you're the first one to text in to the text line at 615-737-1025, you'll win a pair of tickets to go to Game 4 on Sunday between the Predators and the Carolina Hurricanes. Ryan Porth, what is today's trivia question that we can answer on the text line?
So 4 years ago today was Game 5 in Anaheim of the Western Conference Final, where the Preds won 3-1 to take a 3-2 series lead and come back home for the memorable Game 6 to win the West. Which three Preds players scored the three goals in Game 5 against Anaheim in 2017?
If you know the answer to that question, text into our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Which three players scored for the Predators in Game 5 of the 2017 Western Conference Final?
I only know one for sure, and boy, we could never forget it.
Oh, no, we can't. I know two for sure. I may know three. I've got an idea for three. I'll look at Port Taylor and see if I'm right. Already some texts coming in on the text line, so make sure you get your guesses in, coming in very quickly, because people have been very quick on the response time this week with the tickets on the line. We'll get to the winner of that coming up a little bit later this segment.
We already have a winner. I don't know this person's name, but we already have a winner. The first person who texted in got it.
Oh, look at there. Way to go, people. Been really smart this week on the text line. Well done.
What is it? Give us the answer then.
So the first goal was Colin Wilson.
Yep.
The second goal was Pontus Aberg/Aberg.
Who could forget that one?
That was mine.
And then the third goal was the empty netter by Austin Watson.
I got it. All three. Yep. There
Impressive.
You go. They're just rolling in on the text line. So congratulations to whoever got it first. We'll get your information, and you'll be going to Game 4 between the Predators and the Hurricanes coming up on Sunday at 1:30 at Bridgestone Arena. Joe, the story of the game last night, obviously, is the power play. The Predators go 0-for-7 on the power play. Look, there were a few times that they got set up, but it was pretty rare for them to get set up and to get any looks whatsoever on the power play last night. And that's one thing. Like, it's one thing to not get set up and not be able to generate any quality chances on the power play. But when you're also giving up some primo chances going the other way while you're on the power play, that's a huge problem. And that was a huge problem for the Predators last night. The best offensive chances that Carolina was able to generate in the game last night all came shorthanded while the Predators were on the power play. And, Joe, I said this on Twitter, and you and I talked about it a little bit as well. I've watched a lot of hockey over the years, and maybe this is just me being prisoner of the moment, and maybe that's the case. I can't recall a power play that I've watched look worse and look like it's struggling more than the Predators' power play has through these first two games. It's been abysmal. They're 0-for-10 so far on the power play. I know they went 0-for-15 a couple of years ago in that series against Dallas. To me, this looks worse. It really does. Like, this has been a bad, bad stretch for the Predators on the power play, and last night was just about as bad as it gets.
I'll still take this power play over 2019 because at least there's some fun action that results from it.
I guess so.
At least there's some excitement being generated going the other way. That was like the most mundane, like, just get it out of my face, you know, like, oh, Subban from the point again. No, I can't do it, you know. This was at least entertaining, but man, the telegraph passes at times, but then also just the puck being taken away at other times, you know.
Yep.
just one on one. That looked like a junior team playing an NHL team. I mean, it looked like two teams at two different levels. Doesn't make sense that you could have an extra skater and be that incapable of entering a zone. That from that perspective, I don't know that I've seen one game where that was such a problem. And, you know, we don't see too many games where a team gets 7 power plays.
Right.
I mean, and again, this is where I think you and I differ a little bit on the overall performance. I'd say 3 or 4 of those power plays were created by the Preds forcing the Canes to take a penalty in 5-on-5 because they were doing some good things. But then it's like, okay, now it's about to get bad for the Preds because they're on the power play. Watch out, Saros. Here it comes.
Well, yeah, and to your point, yeah. I mean, Saros had to be—he had to keep his head on a swivel, to borrow a Terry Crisp term, last night while the Predators were on the power play. But I mean, there was a power play the Predators had to close out the first period, and I guess to begin the second period as well, where like the last 55 seconds of the first period, it was pretty depressing to watch the Predators try to get in the zone on that power play. I mean, it was brutal. They couldn't complete a pass. Every time they got to the blue line, Carolina was just swatting the puck back down the ice. It didn't matter what the Predators tried. They couldn't get into the zone. And I said this earlier in the show, part of the reason I view this game, I think, a little bit more harshly than some do, is because I know how good Jacob Slavin is. And he did not play for Carolina last night. I think he's by far their best defenseman. So you didn't have to worry about Slavin on the penalty kill. You didn't have to worry about Jacob Slavin taking down 26 minutes 5-on-5 either. And you still could not score a goal. You still could not generate much zone time. You didn't have a lot of quality chances offensively. Like, to me, what happens if Slavin's healthy enough to play in game 3? Like, that's part of of how I view the disappointment of last game. Is I felt like heading into that game, when I saw the news that Slavin was out, I felt like the Predators had a really good opportunity in this game, and they just totally let that fall by the wayside. So maybe I'm viewing this a little bit more harshly than some people are, but not just the power play. I just was not impressed with what the Predators were doing in the offensive zone last night.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, we can all agree on the power play, and that's a good point on Slavin, no doubt. It's one guy, but a very important guy. I think they overall, again, they were over. You're also, it's relative to what we just saw. You know, game one, to me, I came away saying, ugh, they're just going to get dominated. After this game, I think that they did figure some things out. There were some times when we've talked about the net front presence maybe wasn't enough. And I also think there were some times where just, you know, like just one more pass or a little more precision on this pass, or, oh, now you shoot it. There were a couple times where I thought, you know, there were chances for people to take shots. They didn't. You know, there were some execution issues in the offensive zone. But, I mean, at least they had possession,
yeah.
Right? I mean, like game one, most of the last 40 minutes was an eyeful of the regular season kind of domination we saw. I mean, how much optimism do you take out of that? You know, our buddy Jeremy K. Gover on Twitter, you know, to the question of people who are like, punt and play young guys, play Pekka, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they are tied going to the third, game one. They are, you know, last night in position, down 1-0 most of the game, but in position to, you know, to potentially steal that game when Saros playing like he is. Like, they're not that far. You know, you win one game. My question is, can they figure anything out with the power play? I mean, is it going to continue to be a weapon for Carolina?
Well, even if you don't figure out how to score on the power play, like at some point figure out how to not give up 2-on-1s on the power play. That's probably the first step for the Predators that they could take heading into game 3 here. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Wayne from Spring Hill. Wayne, were you at the game last night?
I was, actually. My flight got in about an hour ago.
So what was that like? What were your takeaways from game 2 for the Predators last night?
Anybody who's saying UC Saros should be benched for Pekka is in some other dimension.
Agreed.
Do I still believe Pekka has it? Yes. Do I believe UC is getting it? Yes. That is not the problem that we're having right now. To answer Joe's question from last night, the Coach Hines didn't answer, I believe UC Saros did play well enough to steal the game last night.
Yeah.
We have to score on the other side. We can't just, you know, have UC, okay, UC make 55 saves and let's hope we get a goal.
Hey, thanks for the call, Wayne. We appreciate it.
I want to say a couple of things. I'm sorry, guys.
No, go ahead.
This series probably doesn't go past 5 games. if we get one game at home, it's going to be the 12,000 Smashville fans, and they're willing them to win. That's what's got to happen. And I don't know if that's going to make a big difference to make two games to tie the series up. I don't know. But I think we might be able to get one just because of that.
Hey, thanks for the call, Wayne. We appreciate it. I mean, that's
– I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question that the crowd has directly had an impact on Carolina and the energy that they played with. We've seen this happen at Bridgestone Arena. We know what sort of an effect the crowd can have, and especially when you've gone without it for 14 months now, when you have 12,000 people or however many people are going to be in that building on Friday night for Game 3, even though you're down 0-2 in the series, I mean, there's going to be a ton of energy in that building coming up on Friday night for the Predators. So I agree with Wayne. Like, I expect the Predators in the first period of that game to come out and play with their hair on fire on Friday night. Johansson talked about that a little bit last night as well. That's what the Predators are hoping for and hanging their hats on. Now, I also question, all right, is that going to be enough for you to tie up this series back at home when I think it's been pretty clear so far Carolina's been the better team?
Sure, but I expect it. I expect full energy. It'll be a fantastic scene in there, and it does matter. It does. Now, Carolina was kicking the Preds' butt in the regular season in front of, you know, empty arenas too. But I don't think there's any doubt that that crowd played a role, and I don't know that there's a place where the crowd plays a bigger role than Bridgestone Arena. It's going to be really cool for the city. I think it's going to be helpful for the team. And at some point, it still gets into execution and little decisions. And, like, they're going to be hitting the heck out of the Canes. And I'm sure, I mean, you know, we can see where this is going with the chippiness. No surprise.
Yeah.
It's a playoff series anyway. That happens anyway. And this is going to be what? This is going to be meeting number 11 now between these teams. I mean, it's just going to build. We'll see if they can execute. But I think if there's one point of optimism, to Wayne's point there, that you bring into this, again, Saros is stepping up.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. We didn't know if he could, if he was going to be able to take this. He knows what's at stake here. And he stepped up. And so you got to feel good about that. And that's another thing that feeds the crowd, that feeds the energy. You know, your goaltender making some big saves early in a game. I can certainly envision the Preds getting one Friday. I don't know that I can envision them getting two.
We got a lot of your thoughts to get to in our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get to that coming up next. Right now, though, got to tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. And the NBA play-in tournament gives some teams one last shot to make the playoffs. We saw a great game last night between the Lakers and the Warriors as well. Lakers getting it done late in that game. But everyone can bet this round risk-free on FanDuel Sportsbook. It doesn't matter if you're new to FanDuel or if you already have an account. FanDuel has teamed up with basketball legends Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith to make sure you get your money back if you don't win. That's any user, any bet type, any game. The NBA play-in tournament is going down May the 18th through the 21st, and the FanDuel just made it even more exciting. It's all part of FanDuel's Play-In Palooza. So if you already have a sportsbook account, just open the app and opt in to claim your risk-free bet. And if you're new to FanDuel, sign up with promo code ROB to get your first bet risk-free up to $1,000 exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. You must be 21 and older and present in Tennessee. Refund issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. New user risk-free bet for first real money wager only, and refund issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have partnered up to give you a chance to experience a Nashville SC game this season. Tune in every Monday to Darren, Donick, and Chase for the keyword to text in to win. Good luck from 102.5 The Game, T-Mobile, and Nashville SC. And speaking of Nashville SC, tomorrow morning, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game this Sunday night, you win a prize pack and a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. We'll do that tomorrow at 9:45 here on the show. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Got a lot of thoughts to get to on the Predators on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Got a texture that says, I'm sick and tired of the we played well mentality. Seven power plays, barely any momentum. It's a serious problem. Also, the dump and chase is not working. I'd rather see us try to play out the middle. We never have positive turnover when we dump and chase. It's time to make changes when it comes to the power play line and how we address games when we lose. Joe, what do you think of those comments by our texter there on the text line? Joe's talking on mute again. So that's number two today for the show.
Oh, my gosh.
Well done, Joe.
Well, John Hines would have preferred me to be on mute last night when I asked the question.
That is true.
Or, you know, speak more clearly. Gosh, I've been doing so well, too. Now I've forgotten what we're talking about. Yeah, people upset. You know what? We heard a lot of that today, and you said it, too, and I agree. There's a limit on the, yay, we played well after a shutout loss. I think John Hines wants to, you know, wants to take some positives into game three. I did have a thought last night, you know, is he maybe a little bit just trying to, you know, show a little bit of feistiness in public, keep his team like that. He wants his team to be as ornery and fired up Friday as they can possibly get. And I look, you're heat of the moment after a loss, and you did do some things better in game two. So, you know, all that stuff's fine. But, yeah, fans, they don't want to hear that stuff. It's not as bad as a year ago, and I think Duchesne was the biggest culprit, if I recall correctly. But this whole, hey, like, we played our game, and, you know, we were the better team for the majority. You lost in four to Arizona. There is nothing positive to take from that. Now, in this situation, you're the clear and heavy underdog. No one picked you to win. You had two games in a hostile building, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, I guess you try to take some positives into game three, but it's a stretch, and people are not going to want to hear all about all the good things you did in a 3-0 loss after two games in which you were outscored 8-2 with the other team out hitting you 108-88 and outperforming you in every metric.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, and I get what John Hines is doing. You're down 0-2. You're trying to come back. You're trying to generate some positive momentum for your team heading into game three and taking this thing. If you can just get Friday's game, it's 2-1. You feel good about being at home for game four, and then you move on, try to make it a best of three moving on from there. But I did. Last night, I just – and I know you and I, we disagree on this a little bit. I didn't think the Predators were all that good last night. I thought they were a little bit better than they were in game one, but it never felt like they were overly dangerous in the offensive zone to me last night. And a big part of that, of course, is also from the power play as well. And Roman Josi last night was asked about the power play. What exactly is Carolina doing on the penalty kill that's causing the Predators so many issues to get into the zone? Here's what Roman Josi had to say.
Hey, Roman, to that point, what are they doing on the penalty kill that's making it so difficult for you guys at times to even get set up on the power play?
I mean, they're very aggressive, obviously, and obviously, they have a great kill. I mean, they were one of the top kills in the league, and they play very aggressive. But it's, I mean, we gotta execute better. We gotta find a way to get in. We gotta find a way to get some shots. So we gotta look at our power play and just execute better.
And Joe, to that point, like the texter just brought up the dump and chase on the power play. I get it. That's a popular topic of conversation. That's frustrating for fans. Sometimes teams force you to dump and chase. And when you do it, you got to go in and win the puck battle. Like that's what the dump and chase is for. Go in, get your defense turned around, and go win a puck battle. I mean, Carolina, on their power play, they dump and chase all the time. They just go win the puck battle. They get it, and they're able to cycle from there. I thought the Predators, number one, when they're not carrying the puck in the zone and they have to dump and chase, they're not doing a good enough job of getting to it first and battling for it along the wall. And I do think there have been times where maybe they've dumped and chased a little bit too prematurely rather than just carrying the puck in the zone. Carolina makes that extremely difficult. You heard Josi talk about how aggressive they are. That's part of their aggression. It's basically just trying to stand you up at the blue line and making you dump the puck in. But when they do that, you need to be able to generate enough speed coming in the zone where you're the first one back to that puck, and I don't think the Predators have done a very good job with that at all.
No, it's been amazing. It's been amazing to watch five skaters against four skaters have that much trouble. And again, like the counter, I think Carolina just had three power plays last night, right? you know, the then you watch them on their power play, and it couldn't be easier to set up. And I know there's different ways to, you know, to set up your penalty kill. Actually, the Preds, you know, can be very aggressive too at times. Yeah. But it's something. There's no way that this should be acceptable to the Preds, and there's no way that this should happen again. You know, now I don't know if they're going to get 7 power plays again either, but whatever they get in the next game, like, that's got to be better. There's got to be a way to make them pay for the way they're playing you. This is a faster team. They are incredibly good moving the puck to each other. You know, we know all that, but that does not explain away everything we saw last night. It was brutal.
And by the way, with everything the officials called in the game last night, and they called a lot, and some of which I thought was warranted, some of which I thought was not, how in the world did Jordan Martinuk not go to the box last night for that hit on Matt Benning? I mean, they got tangled up, and Matt Benning's punching him in the top of the head last night, and they both got called for roughing on that play. But the next shift that both of them are out there, I mean, it's a clear definition of a cross-check, a push to the back in a very dangerous area. Matt Benning basically goes face-first into the boards, and after everything you've called in that game, you don't call that hit? I thought that was ridiculous by the officials last night.
That was a nasty, dirty play from Martinuk, and it really could have been bad, and you're right. I mean, now granted, Benning gets a 2-minute roughing for, like, landing 6 punches on his head.
He did.
So, I mean, you know, so, I mean, it's different at playoff time, but yeah. But no, you're right. Well, I mean, look, I mean, they've basically just – they've been calling trips and all. Like, they have been very few. They have not really called – penalties to me to calm things down much.
Right. No, I mean, it's been a lot of stick fouls so far in this series, and it was interesting. I mean, I had a big problem with the Duchesne offsetting penalties in game one. I was like, just drop the puck. What are we doing here? Why are we making this thing 4-on-4? But it was just amazing to me last night that of everything that was called, you let that hit by Martinuk go. I mean, it's right there in front of the official. Benning's got the puck. And he gets launched face first into the boards. I mean, look, obviously, if the Preds get a power play there, probably doesn't make a difference in the game from what we saw. But I just couldn't believe that didn't get called.
Now that was a huge miss. And again, I mean, he went into the boards, you know, face first from quite a distance too.
Yeah,
you know, like that takes a powerful cross check to launch someone that far into the boards. That was nasty. I mean, it's. There is some. I mean, Halla, of course, you know, and I mean, there's some real chippiness in this series, which is fun.
Public enemy number one, Eric Halla.
Yeah.
Did not expect that.
41 games. Yeah. 41 games of the Canes.
It's pretty incredible to watch their reaction to him so far in this series. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Make sure you're listening to the game every weekday for your chance to win $1,000. It's the game's 1K payday, presented by Kentucky Kingdom and Hurricane Bay. Listen for keywords at 9, at noon, and at 3 o'clock as well. When you hear it, go to thegamenashville.com and enter the keyword for a shot at $1,000. We'll be right back with your thoughts here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
This hour of Robbie and Rex Road is brought to you by Trane. Get a great deal this spring on a new Trane heating and cooling system. At Trane, they test so it runs. Visit traneinfo.com to find your local dealer and learn more. It's hard to stop a Trane.
102.5, The Game will be on the road with your chance to win tickets to games 3 and 4 for round 1 of the Stanley Cup playoffs between the Predators and the Carolina Hurricanes at Bridgestone Arena. Today, Stillman and Company will be broadcasting live at Social Furniture from 2 to 6 p.m. for your chance to win a pair of tickets to games 3 and game 4 as well. Darren Donick and Chase will be broadcasting live tomorrow at Pete and Terry's at Bridgestone Arena from 10 to 2 p.m. and we'll have a chance for you to win a pair of tickets to game 4. So we've got tons of opportunities here on ESPN 102.5 The Game for you to be in the building both in game 3 and in game 4 coming up this weekend for the Predators against the Carolina Hurricanes. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Nate text in, what did y'all think of the Canes' first goal? I did not think that was on Saros. didn't think it was either. I thought it was a great play by Svechnikov to put one across the box. And Aho, it was funny because Aho actually didn't get all of it on that shot, but still, I mean, when you make a pass like that, and that's a high-level play by Svechnikov, and Aho's not going to miss on that play. I mean, you're talking about two pretty good players there for the Hurricanes. There's not much Saros could have done about that one.
Zero chance for Saros. Zero.
And he stopped a couple more after that where I thought he had zero chance, especially, I mean, the one that stands out to me, the save from last night, and he had a couple really good ones, but the save from last night that stands out to me is the two-on-one where you've got Brett Pesce coming down the wing, and he slides it over to Trocheck, and Saros is sliding the other direction and still somehow gets his pad on that shot. I mean, it was just an unreal save by UC Saros, and he made a couple of those. He had a couple more on Aho shorthanded that he had to make some huge stops on as well. But that stop on Trocheck, I thought, was the save of the night for Saros last night.
No doubt. And again, wrote about it, The Athletic. I thought it was an incredible play. And Tolvanen messed up the play. I mean, it's easy to sit here and say, hey, you know, you messed that up. You're in the heat of the moment. You're on the power play. All of a sudden, you're defending a two-on-one. But Tolvanen can't let it go back to Trocheck there because Saros is setting up for Pesce, and he's probably going to be fine. You know, Pesce, Saros, isolate it on the left side. You're good. But he let it go back, so Saros somehow has to take all his momentum back the other way. And not only does he kick out to make this incredible save, he gets himself in a position to stop the rebound too. I mean, that was, again, that's the play that, to me, right there, I circled it and said, okay, if they win this game, there's your goalie steals the game moment.
Yeah.
And of course, it was still a play to circle because it was an example of why Saros deserved better last night.
So, Joe, after the game last night, the Predators find themselves in an 0-2 hole. And we started to hear some of this midway through the season with John Hines and the coaching staff as well. And it's starting to creep back up again now that the Predators have gotten themselves into an 0-2 hole and putting a lot of blame on John Hines and saying he's the reason they're down 0-2, which I just think is ridiculous. Now, I'm not saying John Hines has been perfect. There have been some decisions that he's made, even with the lineup that we've talked about that I've not agreed with in this series, and I certainly don't think that he's done like this great job in this series so far. But like, at what point with this group are we going to start placing the blame on the players? Like, they've gone down this road. They've changed the coaching staff. They brought in a different head coach. I mean, they've changed up the assistant coaches as well. They've done different things on the power play. They've had five different people in charge of the power play the last 3 years. Like, at what point are we going to put the responsibility for what we've seen on this core group of players? Ryan Johansson's getting paid $8 million a year. Matt Duchesne's getting paid $8 million a year. Victor Arvidsson looks like a shell of himself right now. Like, to me, the story of this is twofold. Number one, Carolina's very good, and they are by far the better team in the series. I think we knew that heading into the series. But also, the guys that you need to perform and have needed to perform for a while now have not done it yet in this series. And even to a certain degree, like Forsberg, you know, he scores the goal. I think he's been okay for the most part. But you still need another level from him as well. I mean, the guys that they need to produce are not doing it. And that, to me, is the takeaway from this series so far. Even on the power play, like they've tried, I can promise you, with the last 3 years, they've tried just about every formation, just about everything you can try on the power play. It's on the personnel. They're the ones not getting this done. And I saw a lot of this after the game last night, placing blame at the feet of John Hines. And I understand it. He's the head coach. He's going to receive some heat when things don't go poorly. But I just think we're giving these players way too much of a pass, and quite frankly, I'm tired of it.
Well, I agree. I would also say you could take that another step and talk about the guy who puts the team together. And,
sure,
you know, there's been plenty of that, and there will be more of that to come. But on the players specifically, I thought one guy really of this core group that we all agree has to play like they're paid, has to step up. One guy that I was really impressed with, I thought Josi was great. I really did. I thought he was all over the place. The dude plays almost 27 minutes. He gets eight shots on goal. Not a ton of them were great shots, but he had a couple good looks. He had four hits. I mean, I thought he was great. And after that, you guys tell me, who would you say would be like your second and third best players? I might go Carrier as the next best skater out there. But who would you guys say played well last night?
I mean, I thought Cunningham was okay last night. I liked the response I saw from Cunningham for the most part.
Yep.
Ekholm, other than the penalty he took, I thought was pretty good as well. But I agree, like, one guy I've been really impressed with in this series has been Carrier. Like, he continues to play really well, regardless of whether or not he's been with Ekholm or that he's been with Josi. But at forward, I mean, outside of that, I just didn't see much. I've not seen much from this group. I expected Roman Josi to bounce back. A game from Roman Josi like we saw in game one, it's pretty rare. Like, I expected him to bounce back, and he did. I thought he was really good last night. I just don't know. I mean, we talk about trying to get these players of this core group to another gear. It's been so long now. I just don't know if they can get to that other gear anymore. I really don't.
No, I think the evidence points overwhelmingly to that they can't. I mean, I think, like, how did they get here? They got here with an admittedly fantastic story, this Herd line and what they do and how they attack everything and show some skill, and they establish a really powerful forecheck. The overall grit and the defensive responsibility and Saros, that's been the formula to get here, and that's great and good for them for getting here. But you want to win now? You want to beat teams like this? You better have some forwards who can not just, rise to the occasion and hang with top players on the other team, but finish. I thought Forsberg last night. I don't think Forsberg was bad. I mean, I think Forsberg had some moments, and he hit the post on that one in the third period. It was very close to the equalizer there. But again, it's Forsberg and it's Josi, and there's not nearly enough otherwise. And Mikhail Granlund now has 3 points in 12 playoff games with the Preds.
Yep.
And this is the third straight postseason where – now, of course, he struggled the entire first season, even when he came in the Fiala trade. But he played a lot better under Hines last year. Didn't see him in the bubble. He was great this year, honestly. I mean, he was one of the best players on the team this year. Not seeing him, waiting for him to do something.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair when it comes to Mikhail Granlund for sure. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Josh texting in, I don't disagree with you at all, Robbie. The players should be held accountable for their shortcomings. My only response is that when the team was playing well the last 2 months, everyone was raving about the great coach turning things around and got the players to buy in. If he gets the credit for him playing well, shouldn't he take the flack when things aren't going well as well? I think it's a fair point. Brought up by Josh. Now, I still put most of the blame on the players.
Yeah, look, it's true. I mean, there's some level of team plays well, coach gets credit. Team plays poorly, coach gets blamed. There's some level of that for sure. But, like, I've seen a little bit of this, how come Hines can motivate this team in the regular season to play their butts off, and now he can't do it in the playoffs? I mean, their effort is – they are spilling it all, okay? And I think that's probably part of his post-game demeanor is he knew that. They spilled it. They are playing their guts out. They're not executing. And so, to me, in hockey, there's a system, and here's what you're supposed to do, and then it's on those guys on the ice. Coach is standing there behind the bench hoping that they make just the right pass, hoping that a Tolvanen – recognizes that he's got to get in front of the net in a certain situation. Recognizing that here's where you take a shot. I mean, the players have got to make the plays.
When we come back, we're going to take a quick step away from the Predators. Got some more Julio Jones rumors circling around that involve the Tennessee Titans as well. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, Smashville, the game Nashville and Dos Equis is bringing the party to you. Text the word GOLDEN to 615-737-1025. That's golden to 615-737-1025. Now to qualify for the ultimate in-home watch party. And did I mention one lucky fan is getting tickets to a playoff game at Bridgestone Arena? Get a dose, Smashville. You must be 21 or older to enter and win. Enjoy Dos Equis responsibly. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Joe, we've talked about the Julio Jones rumors that have been floated out there over the last few weeks regarding what his future could look like with the Atlanta Falcons. And your colleague, Jeff Schultz, at The Athletic this morning, came out with a piece kind of highlighting the situation with Julio Jones, and it opens by saying, quote, "The Falcons would like to trade Julio Jones. That doesn't mean it's 100% going to happen, and that doesn't mean some members of the organization don't believe the future Hall of Famer can still play when healthy. But Jones's availability on the trade market has been clear almost from the time new general manager Terry Fontenot and coach Arthur Smith landed in Atlanta." So it sounds like still a very real possibility that Julio Jones can be traded. And some teams that Schultz mentions in this piece on theathletic.com that fall into the category of maybe showing some interest in Julio Jones: the Ravens, the 49ers, the Patriots, the Indianapolis Colts, and the Chargers. And then, according to Schultz, one league source said the Titans may also show interest as well, but at the moment they're close to the cap ceiling. So, Joe, we've talked about this with Julio Jones. I look at the Titans' salary cap right now and just don't really know how they would be able to make this work. But their name continues to pop up in discussions and in pieces and in articles when it comes to potential fits for Julio Jones. How much do you read into this? How much do you think there actually could be some interest, and not just interest in Julio Jones, some interest in trying to actually make something happen if you're the Titans?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could still dunk, Robbie, because I'd like to dunk on this so hard. it's not happening. Look, first of all, I will say that one interesting thing about this is obviously Arthur Smith is now the coach of the Falcons. I'm not asking Jeff's sources on this, but I mean, when he says one league source of the Titans also may show interest, I mean, Arthur Smith knows what's going on here, right? I'm sure there's been some informal conversations about this and other things. But, you know, as Schultz points out here, you know, this is the cap space. It's a huge hit. It's probably going to be one of these teams that has a lot of cap space. The Titans are not one of those teams. If it was so important for the Titans to have, you know, like this dynamic number two. Now, I know some people say, oh, number two, it's Julio Jones. But Julio Jones is the number two here if he comes here. I mean, or, you know, you can call them co-ones.
Yeah.
He's on the downside of his career. I still think he's very good. He's not the elite, dominant, top three receiver he was, and he's also had this accumulation of injuries. But if this was that much of a priority, then they probably would have drafted a receiver earlier than they did, right? In the fourth round, or gone after more than Josh Reynolds in the free agent market. Again, I think the Titans, or tried to get Corey Davis to come back.
Or maybe they're just planning on trading for Julio Jones.
Well, there you go. Or maybe it was all leading to this. It doesn't add up, and it's not going to happen here. This piece brings up another like fantasy football versus real football thing. You know, when people get into this stuff, like Titans fans, I hear like, yeah, restructure the deals, just restructure, create more rate. Well, that's fine. You can kick the can down the road. In this piece, he's talking about Matt Ryan. So he had a $40.9 million cap hit, right? They restructured it to $26.9 this year. And still they can't sign their rookies.
Yeah.
Like, they can't even sign Kyle Pitts right now with their cap situation. But by restructuring, which just sounds wonderful, Ryan's cap number next year is $48.66 million.
Oh, my goodness.
So, again, how much can kicking do you want to do? Like, you're going to pay the piper at some point, right? The Titans to and I relate that to the Titans because they would have to do some serious stuff or cutting people more, whatever, to make this possible. To me, it's not worth Julio Jones at this stage in his career. And I don't know if they have enough to go with Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown. with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback and a really good offensive line. I don't know if the other skill on this offense is enough, but clearly that's their approach. And I don't think that it's crazy to think that it is enough. I don't think it's crazy to think a Reynolds, a Fitzpatrick, a Firkser, a Darrington Evans, you know, would give you enough help with those other guys. They're going to get great matchups because of those guys. Now, to me, if you're going to do something, you're going to do something and make a trade or create room to fill a need, then go get a starting tight end.
Exactly. I mean, that's still, to me, what the next step is for the Titans. Like, you've got to find a starting tight end to come into this season with. So, look, I get it. I get why the idea of Julio Jones is attractive. And I'm sure that John Robinson, if it comes to that, he'll make a phone call. He'll see what the price is and do his due diligence that way. I just don't see from a salary cap standpoint how this is even possible for the Titans. And also, like, just the player himself. Like, look, I still believe when he's healthy, Julio Jones is very good. He is a very good player. He's only 31 at the moment. Now, he's been in the league for a long time. He's been in the league since 2011. And the last few years, he played 9 games this past year. He did play 15 in 2019, but if you watched him play in 2019, I mean, he was dealing with injuries pretty much the whole year. He just found a way to play through it. I mean, injuries have started to become a pretty consistent theme with Julio Jones, and he's not getting any younger. So I think it's absolutely fair to say, I mean, the 2015 best days prime Julio Jones, those days are well behind him at this point. He could still be a very good player. I think he'd absolutely still be a pretty high level number two, and he could still be a number one on some teams in this league as well. It sounds great for the Titans. I just don't see a way this happens. And to your point, like, if this was a part of the plan, like, who else are you going to have to cut? What else are you going to have to do to restructure? Like, to me, that's when you start eating into the offensive line at that point. And that's not something you want to do if you're the Titans.
And you've already done it. You've eaten into your secondary. I mean, I don't see where it makes sense. And actually, Julio is 32, and he missed 7 games last year. All the averages are going down again. Where is he right at this moment in this league? Is he a top 10 receiver? When healthy, I could buy that. I get the appeal. Again, when we want to play some fantasy football, I get the appeal of A.J. Brown on one side, Julio Jones on the other. I'm sure Ryan Tannehill's like, hey, shut up. Let's bring in Julio.
A.J. Brown might even be willing at that point to give up number 11. I think he would be.
I think he probably would be. But it's not happening. It sounds like a trade could well happen. And, of course, if you're the Titans and, you're thinking about, like, the AFC, you sure hope, like, because the Colts do have space.
I know. That's
you sure
what
hope
I was gonna
the Colts
say.
Don't get into this.
That's what I was going to say.
You know, like, the Ravens,
but
especially
the Colts.
You talk
about teams that have cap space. Colts have got some cap space. Can you imagine, like, how scared would you be if you're a Titans fan? And I realize it's Carson Wentz, and people have, you know, very wide degrees of opinions on Carson Wentz. I'd feel a lot better about Carson Wentz if I'm a Colts fan if Julio Jones is out there to throw the ball to, that's for sure.
Yes, sir. Yeah, so maybe you do just blow everything up and just to keep him from them. maybe that's why you trade for him. But, no, I mean, look, he's not going to be here. So, it is that – I mean, it does – raise my eyebrow just the fact that Arthur Smith is now in Atlanta, and Jeff, you know, made a point to put that line in the story. And again, I'm sure Arthur Smith, John Robinson, Mike Vrabel have had some chats and some laughs over this whole idea, but it doesn't make sense.
When we come back, we'll get back into the Nashville Predators. An interesting moment last night in the post-game press conference between Joe Rexroad, Steve Lehman, and Predators head coach John Hines. And then some shots taken at Rexroad as well. We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.